Hello, everyone. Today's episode is my interview on You Never Know. You know what I mean? Me and my boy Mike Studd talk about the mistakes I made to lose over $100 million and how to be more interested than interesting. This is one of my favorite interviews I've done so far, so make sure you check out Mike's podcast in the description. And don't forget, register for my free training on Fridays at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Text me anytime at 949-298-2905 and email me at david@dmeltzer.com to register. That's right, free training every Friday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. This is Entrepreneurs The Playbook.
For everyone listening, this is Dave Meltzer. We got connected just by me simply, I think, just starting to comment on your
DM
on your posts. I said it out there. I'll say it again. One of my favorite follows on the internet. Okay. I talk a lot on this podcast specifically about, you know, a spiritual shift that I've gone through recently where I felt like I needed to change my perspective and broaden my perspective just on life and how I was viewing things. And one of the main assets to that growth was changing my input. So realizing that I need to be on my phone a lot instead of just following along the people I was following originally, you know, I realized that once I started incorporating people with, one, teaching me something or helping me grow in mindset, spirituality, anything that I felt like served me and I connected to, I would follow and just unfollowed some of the things that were kind of, I felt like were taking away from my mindset. And you were one of the first guys. I don't even know how I came across it, but that's how we got connected. And then I came and did The Playbook, which is your podcast, which was an awesome conversation. But I feel like I meet tons of people doing what I do. And there's certain people you just get little connections with right away. And it feels like that with you. So I'm excited. We talked about getting him to the ranch and he's here.
That's right.
I've been waiting
for this.
We have rappers, artists and mainly athletes.
Yeah.
People have, they're known most for entourages. You come the deepest. I can count. Did we lose some already or no? We're all here.
We got some coming.
You're like seven or eight plus coming in hot to the ranch.
Yeah.
I love it, man.
I love traveling.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
I feel the same way. Just as I started following you, talking to you, and then you coming in for The Playbook, really, and get to know you.
Yeah.
You know when someone's at the same frequency.
Yeah.
And earlier today, I went to this social marketing conference, and I talked about how in the future there's a ubiquity that's coming about. And although we have this hyper-technological world coming, it's really going to resort back to the same old radio frequency, meaning that your whole life will be determined by the frequency that you're at, the vibration and understanding and awareness that you have. And the wider your spectrum, or the stronger your signal, or the clearer your message, there's a certain frequency, and more people that tune in to, you know, the Mike Studd frequency, it's going to change lives, and you're going to, you know, plant and water seeds that can change the world through your mindset, through your perspective. And I'm trying to do the same. And I think you're just a little younger, so shifting your paradigm like I did years ago for myself,
right.
I see extraordinary things, because not only do you have this platform, but you are an artist.
Yes, sir.
And that creativity and the ability to channel things, and what you do as a rapper, you know, there's no doubt is a channeling. But you can do that also with inspiration.
Absolutely.
Beyond music.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's funny. I remember back to why I started this podcast, and you're kind of touching on it, but I was really inspired by the book Think and Grow Rich, the concept, right? Yeah. And I know that's a big, you've touched on it a bunch in your content, but I know it's one of those things where I realized very quickly that I wasn't going out of my way to give in the form of, like, you know, I'd give if anyone needed anything, my friends, I'd give, you know, the shirt off my back to them. But as far on a general, broader scale for my vibration, just like constantly being of service and giving. And I realized that I was looking what about me? What's coming for me all the time, you know? And the Think and Grow Rich, I read the book and I started thinking about how genius, like just the concept of, you know, what Carnegie did as far as orchestrating that and giving the access to the network. So I started paying attention more and more to my DMs as a form of giving. So I would go out of my way to answer 10 to 15 DMs a day thoughtfully and really give them, you know, as much as just like a quick answer. Like I would, you know, read, I get a lot of long messages. Yeah. And I realized that most of my following are kids. You know, majority of my following is in the 18 to 25 year old age group. And it's a very confusing time because all of a sudden the party's over and it gets real very quickly. And in this day and age, you're looking around, comparing yourself to what everyone else is doing, and you're not got to understand and figure out who you are and what you want to be, all these pressures. And I'm realizing there was a trend where my fans, a lot of these people were, as much as they love my music, that they really want insight on how to navigate. Because my story, we'll get to our stories a bit, yeah, but it was definitely a huge pivot going through a downfall and pivoting and just going where the wind took me, per se. So getting back to the point, this podcast, I kind of set it up in that sense where I know everyone I sit across from has a different version of the same story, in the sense where it's like the similarities that even Dave Meltzer, the entrepreneur, and Jared Goff, the quarterback, there's so many similarities, just like Napoleon Hill would outline, like, look, all these guys react, all the best businessmen react this way, and this is how they handle this, and this is how they handle loss. And it's like, this is my version of that, albeit I think my biggest purpose of this podcast was to be giving. This is insight that I know that all these fucking kids are going to really value, and they have been, you know, and it's, that's kind of the whole ideology behind it. So I'd love to get into your story. I know you fucking talk, you're talking your ass off all the time, and
that's all right.
You're rocking and rolling all the time. I follow you closely, but I'll just give me a nutshell version of kind of your upbringing. You can go at whatever pace you want.
Sure.
And we can just rock and roll, but I'd love to just kind of paint the picture.
Yeah, I think, you know, besides the activity, it's the perspective that I like to share, because I grew up poor.
Yes.
My dad left when I was 5. So I had this extraordinary mom. She's an educator, second grade teacher, you know, really enforced education. Didn't believe the fetus was developed until after graduate school. So a shitload of pressure. I mean, I have, for those who follow me and those who don't, I have like the classic joke about my mom. She was a black belt in the martial arts, right? Third degree black belt in the martial art of Jewish guilt.
Yeah.
And so, and I do, I tell people, I'm a parent of 4. It's the most important thing that I'm doing. It's the most truly purposeful thing I do, and also the most passionate thing that I do. But my mom taught me how to raise kids, and there's just 2 things you need to know. Well, really 3. 1, love your kids no matter what.
Right.
But more importantly, wake their asses up by 5 a.m., and 2, guilt them. You never have to hit them.
Yeah.
Just use guilt, man. Yeah. I was so afraid to make my mom, you know, upset with me,
because right,
it would break her heart or whatever. The right, guilt was extraordinary. But my mom set a great example. She was an extraordinary educator, a catalyst to so many people in my life, but terrible businesswoman, terrible relationship with money. Mm-hmm. She lacked a lot of self-worth. My dad was emotionally abusive to her, mm-hmm, so a little bit shattered. But my mom worked 2 jobs. She packed our dinners in a station wagon. She filled up turnstiles with greeting cards at 7-Eleven at night, mm-hmm, and would have us study and teach each other. But, you know, I was super happy. And I think it's important, because through these 3 phases of understanding of what people have, you can live in a world of not enough, just enough, or more than enough. Mm-hmm. And although, like, I had nothing, like, yeah, sometimes it was tough to eat. You know, a good day out for the Meltzer kids was we would get 2 large French fries in a big bowl, and 6 kids get to share it. We had a 2-bedroom apartment, mm-hmm, but I was super happy.
All right.
Super happy.
That's all you knew.
Yeah, all I knew. And my mom, only time I wasn't happy, my mom would cry when the financial stresses got bad. Mm-hmm. She had too much pride to ask her parents for help or others, because mm-hmm, they told her probably not to marry my dad, and, you know, a whole bunch of things you learn later, right, on in life. But I was sitting there, and I'd see my mom crying because the car broke down, figuring out how we were going to have money for food or something. And while my siblings took the position that, to make my mom happy, I'm going to get straight A's and, you know, memorize Latin or whatever the hell my siblings, all went to schools like Duke. So right, they're incredible academics. I sat there going, I'm just going to be rich. So my whole mindset, you know, as I get older and understand how you're driven, that I must be what I can be, and I knew I could be rich and I must be it. And so my whole life was driven to this idea that money was going to buy me happiness that I'd never had.
Right.
I looked up on the hill and the kids who had doctors and lawyers as parents and big cars and big houses, I was inferior to them. Like I felt a chip on my shoulder, like, dude, you're not better than me. And you know how kids are, they're mean. And they did try to, even my brother-in-law who grew up here in Beverly Hills, you know, even when I was in college, I felt, and it was me, not him. I felt like he thought he was better than me. And I thought everyone thought that had money thought they were better than me. I used to say, you were born on third base and think you hit a home run. I'll show you. And initially I thought I'd be an athlete like you. My quantum memory or my DNA wasn't working with me as well. But I did play football in college. Once I got ran over by Christian Okoye, I realized my mom's favorite thing was going to be held true. Doctor, lawyer, or failure. So I immediately wanted to be a doctor. Then I learned from my oldest brother that was doing his residency that doctors needed to be in hospitals. And so this is when the big lesson of my life changed. And this is a weird way to learn it, but I told my brother, I don't want to be in hospitals. And he's like, dude, you're 18, you're pre-med at a great college. God knows you're not going to be a professional football player. What do you mean you don't like hospitals? I'm like, well, I'm going to be a sports doctor. I'll be in the training room on the sidelines. He's like, you're a moron. You know? But then he gave me the best advice. Be more interested than interesting. He said, David, he goes, I'm well-trained. I'm a doctor. I want you to, in college, be educated. I want you to be interested. Start asking questions. Don't just say, I want to be a doctor because I'm going to make a lot of money. Find out what being a doctor's like. Go find someone that's a doctor and ask them what it's really like. So I immediately changed to be a lawyer because I hate hospitals. Here's where it got cool for me. Another great lesson. I'm very rare because I stuck to my guns about being rich. Like, I truly believed that money was going to buy me happiness and love. And I got engaged when I was in law school because she was rich. Like, literally. I mean, I was driven by this money idea. And I don't usually admit that, but it's true. And then the Jaeger
will start talking for you.
The truth serum. I want my tap back. Anyway, so then, but I reverse engineered where I went to law school to be rich. Most kids wouldn't do this, but I took my brother's advice to heart. So I did the research back then, and there was no internet. I did the research, what graduate job out of law school pays the most? And it was an oil and gas litigator. Then I did my research to find out what law school had the most graduates working for the big oil companies like Shell and Chevron and those, and how much they'd make. I found out that Tulane University, which was a top 20 law school, I was one of the 40 top 20s. I can say that as a dad now. Anyway, I literally reverse engineered it. They had the best maritime law program, oil and gas program. And I went there to be rich. And I was so laser focused. People, you know, they would come up with these BS in law school. I'm here. I'm going to be a legal aid. I want to help people. I want to change this. I'm an environmental lawyer. You know, I'm a sports lawyer, all this stuff. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to be an oil and gas litigator. Oh, why? I was like, make a lot of money. Exactly. Literally, I tell everyone. Like, my nickname in college was Money Money. I was so money-driven. I identified, defined myself by money. Everything was money. Graduate law school, did really well. I got the job. Oil and gas litigator. But I also applied from one of my professors in Greece, oil and gas guy, who said, you know, you'd be a really good sales guy for this legal publisher. They make a shitload of money. And they're coming out with this new thing on the internet, right? Legal research on the internet.
What year was this?
92. So early, it was .edu type of internet. Carrying around an XD computer with a monochrome screen internet. So I literally, another great piece of advice. Now, my mom, my hero, my guide, I asked her, you know, what should I do? Because I said, Mom, I want to be rich. I want to buy you a house and a car. That's my dream. I don't really give a shit about myself, but I'm going to buy you a house and a car. And all these idiot brothers and sister of mine, they can go to Harvard, Penn, Columbia, or Duke even, but they're not going to buy you a house and a car. My dad told me the A students, they teach the world. The B and C students run it. I'm going to run this world for money. So I go ahead and ask her, should I take the internet job or should I take the legal job? And without blinking, she's like, you got to be a real lawyer. And she literally said, Dave, the internet's a fad. Do not do it. And that's where the big lesson, number two, Be more interested than interesting. I probably tell myself 10 times a day and teach people 10 times a day.
I love that.
Till it gets old. But this one, just because someone loves you doesn't mean they give you good advice. My mom still gives me advice on being a parent. I put her on speakerphone today, and literally they could tell I was taking advice on parenting. My mom even said to me, she was talking about this get a gift business and me and this other Jeff Fenster entrepreneur that I mentor.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, her and her mom, we were teasing that you guys learned your business acumen from us. But I'm like, mom, and she's like, but so I forget what her term was, but everyone can't be good at everything. But when it comes to parenting, honey, I'm like, you're God. Yeah, she is. And so I learned to start finding people that sit in the situation that I want to be. Don't go ask second grade teachers about the internet.
Right.
So I took that job, made $1 million 9 months out of law school.
Wow.
And it just reinforced money bought love and happiness, because I bought my mom a house and a car, paid off my law loans, and I 24, I just turned 25. I was super happy, and all my friends thought it was the coolest thing ever. Right. They laughed, they snickered, they made fun of me when I took the sales job. Mm-hmm. Like, can you believe Meltzer? Oh my God, his mom must be shitting. He's not a lawyer. Mm-hmm. My mom actually made me take the bar because she thought the internet was a fad. Well, you know, when this internet thing doesn't fall, you still have your bar, right? Anyway, two years later, everyone was begging me for a job.
Wow.
And that's a great lesson, because even, one of the scariest things I did in my career, and we'll get to losing everything, was when I made it all back and built a brand for myself and started to speak, write books, and then the social media stuff, so many people made fun of me. Mm-hmm. Imagine being 50 years old and being successful again, right? And now you're going not only on the internet doing videos like Tony Robbins, but speaking on stages and writing books and totally illuminating what mistakes that you've made.
Right.
That now just isn't on a stage in front of 500 corporate executives, where you get paid some coin. Mm-hmm. But, there's millions of people now that you're sitting there going, look, I did this. I'm a manipulator. Mm-hmm. Right. All the things, I lost over $100 million, all this stupid shit. Mm-hmm. Well, people are making fun of me, laughing at me, and now again they're applauding me. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's amazing. And I see the biggest problem with social media and being young, the audience that you're trying to inspire, is they define themselves by how much they make, by what they do, but worse, what other people think of them, or they're voting for what other people want for them, and then they elect it in their lives and they're resentful.
I know.
And they don't, other people do it for the right reasons. Like, my mom's reasoning is to keep me secure and safe.
Right.
I think that's the internal nature of a mom.
Of course.
I birthed you. I'm supposed to keep you alive.
Yeah, guiding you.
I'm not going to put you out there, jumping off of bridges with skateboards.
Right.
Right.
Absolutely.
Or risking all your money.
Right.
I want you to be secure.
Right.
Anyway, that money kept driving me. I went to the Silicon Valley, learned how to raise money, which, by the way, I still think is an underrated skill.
Learning and you'll to raise get money. This.
Yeah. People don't teach raising money, right? Mm-hmm. I should do a micro course on freaking how to raise money.
Sign me up.
Right. Not just to pitch, but talk about, no matter what the economy is like, one of the best skill sets in the world.
Absolutely.
I'm a freaking great money raiser. Mm. Whether for charity or for business, there's nothing better you could do than be the guy that could raise money. Because there's rich, and then there's the guy that can raise money from the rich people. I won that Variety Magazine Sports Philanthropist of the Year. Mm-hmm. Variety Magazine's, Philanthropy, Humanitarian, the Sports Humanitarian of the Year. But it was Matthew McConaughey, Morgan Freeman, Seth Rogen, Gina Rodriguez, Olivia Wilde, and Dave Meltzer.
Wow.
And so, literally, what do you do as a speech when they put you between Morgan Freeman and Matthew McConaughey? So I got up there, and they had a green, the whole screen up there, and they said, do not go off script. So what do?
Go
I
went off
script, right? Mm-hmm. So I got up there, and I said, and it's the epitome of what I believe. I said, number one, I know you're asking yourself two questions. One, who the hell is this? And two, why would they give a sports agent a humanitarian award?
Right.
But then I said, look, I am not a philanthropist. I'm a philanthropimp. Right? Because I pimped out more celebrities and athletes for charity because I know how to raise money. Mm-hmm. Right? I pimped them out.
Right.
You and I both know how to pimp out our famous friends
for
good purposes and good intent. Right? You're using all your great friends from Post Malone to Goff to Larry King right. to teach people.
Right.
Right. Selflessly. Absolutely. So I think raising money is, if you're out there and you're wondering, like, what should I do? You know, build a skill set. Learn how to raise money.
Right.
You will kill it in life.
Are you gonna do it? You should do a course on
I'm going to. You know what? I'll definitely do it now.
The seed's been planted right here.
Exactly.
At the ranch. So
got that micro course coming, how to raise money for yeah. charity or business. But I learned how to do that, and then in the right place at the right time, because I do work hard, smart, and long, ended up CEO of the world's first smartphone. So the world's wow. first Windows
C device. Is that with Samsung?
Yeah, it's a Windows C device. It never really made it. It was $1,700 back then.
Wow.
It was a computer in your
hand.
What
year was this?
99, 2000, mm-hmm. 2001. We won Comdex Best of Show 3 times, best gadget all over the world.
Wow.
People can Google it. It looks like a Matrix.
How did you
cult.
Land there?
So I was in the Silicon Valley. I'd raised $169 million with our team for a middleware company. Middleware back then was you transcoded XML, the internet, so like E-Trade's website, onto a flip phone. It was called a WAP phone.
Okay.
Right? Remember, you used to trade with like Alaska Airlines, E-Trade. Those are all our clients. And what happened when I was a director at that company and raised the money is I realized that I had ripped off a whole bunch of people that gave $169 million, because once I got into the business, I said, wait a second, someday they're not going to need to transcode this stuff. Someday they'll just actually have the internet in your hand. Mm. So I tried to transform the company from transcoding to true Windows browsing, because Windows was really the only browser.
Right.
So through that, I was talking around the world. I was still speaking for Ingram Micro and a bunch of other stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was in my early 30s making a shitload of money. But I was talking about what, there was no smartphone. I called it a convergence device. In fact, if you Google convergence device, you'll see Dave Meltzer, first convergence device, you know, Samsung manufactured. Wow. It was called the PC-ePhone. Clever
branding
name.
Wasn't great.
Not quite the iPhone. But you know, yeah. it's funny that I just realized one thing. I've always made fun of the name that we gave it,
right?
The PC-ePhone. But think about E-phone. It. How much different is that from the iPhone?
Not that far.
It's not that far. Not that far. Let's be honest. I'm not as dumb
Don't
as I look.
Don't beat yourself up over it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I consider it a big win. It
sounds like at a very young age, you established that money, you're going to have money. It was a driving force, you know, and probably yeah. undertone of all your decision making. Sounds like it was in a lot
conscious,
of ways.
Conscious, subconscious, and unconscious Everything. From the time I was 5.
So you definitely manifested that. I know you're a manifest yeah. believer through and through, and so am I. Now, you said it right when it happened, you're able to, you know, do the things you want to do for your mom, which obviously brings you joy, and getting kind of getting the things that you always kind of longed for. Where at what point, I guess, walk me through, can you remember your psyche? Like,
yeah,
obviously the honeymoon high of like when you first get that million or two. Now, when you're in your 30s, you're still navigating and going
so
after.
Into the 20s, that money, I start buying more things and different things. And unbeknownst to me, I was very value-driven. Although I was money-driven,
yeah.
I had that mom's values in me. Mm-hmm. Like I was a good person. But because I was so money-driven and I had a scarce energy because I grew up with nothing, that I was always trading. So people thought I was super generous because I bought my mom a house and a car. But I bought her the house and the car because I wanted something in return. Right, I wanted to be the favorite child. I wanted the rest of my family to be like, oh my God, Dave's so successful. Mm. I wanted to prove to everyone that I could get the only B in my family and be the most successful. I wanted to be better than my sister. There's a whole bunch of
chip on your shoulder.
All trading, man. It was right. all, even like I gave money to my brother's temples. I gave money to, you know, all types of different causes. But I and I'm old enough to tell now, I would never have been able to do this. I did it for a reason. Like I love when people were like, he's so generous. You know, I wanted, mm-hmm. I love that Larry David was like, man, if I could give anonymously and I knew everybody would knew I gave the money, I'd do it. That was me.
Yeah.
I was literally Larry David, yeah. right? And anyway.
I love that.
But I was a trader. I wasn't an unconditional giver.
Right.
And until I went bankrupt, I didn't even learn about
it. I mean, you're being honest about it, but I could say the same. Like even when I was speaking on it, when we opened up, just, you know. Always what was in it for me was an undertone of every decision. And I think so many people can relate to that. Just when did the awareness come for you that that was happening?
Yeah, so what happened, I got married mm-hmm. and I was blessed. I am a manifester. I met my wife in the fourth grade and my best friend in the sixth grade who lived in the same street as us is one of the first girls I ever saw when I moved to California from Akron, Ohio. She skateboarded by my house and there was like this instant feeling. And I was just a little boy. Right. But by the time I was 12 in sixth grade camp, I asked my best friend to ask her to go steady. Mm-hmm. And she said, no, tell him to ask me himself. Mm-hmm. And she embarrassed me. Mm-hmm. So I threw an egg at her. I threw rocks at her. I made fun of her. She had pubic hair as a head by the time she reached puberty. You know, there's no hair product back then.
Yeah.
She's going to kill me when she sees this. And but literally, I adored her. Her cousin was one of my best friends. I tried to date her through junior high school and high school. And literally, he would always tell me, her cousin, dude, stay away from her. She hates you.
She wants nothing to do with you.
Exactly. Dude. Which also reinforced, I thought my wife, part of the reason that she went out with me was because I had money. Mm. Right, I started dating her at 28, and I thought
she held out that long.
Well, I was engaged in law school. Mm. Super karma story. Literally, right. Engaged in law school. Run into her. I'm engaged. Her mom was dying of cancer. She goes home to tell her mom in the hospital. You're not going to believe who I ran into. She said Dave Meltzer. The mom said, "Oh, isn't that shit that threw the egg at you?" And then she told her what he's doing. Oh, he's in law school. You know, he's doing this and that. And she goes, you should date him. And she said, no, he's engaged. And her mom said, you should date someone like him. Mm. 2 years later, I'm in Rosarita Beach Resort. She's with 11 surfers, literally the only girl with 11. And I'm with some drunk law guy from Temple that works for me. And I'm going to the bathroom because I got to pee bad because I drink a ton of tequila and Jaeger.
There you go, baby.
Literally, I bump in out of a crowded, you know how those club resorts get, right?
Weird.
Bathing suit. I get bumped into her and bounce off her. She's wearing this red Massimo bathing suit. And I was like, oh,
wow,
Julie Penn.
Wow.
And she's like, Dave Meltzer, first words out of her mouth, I have a bone to pick with you. I'm like, huh? It's like, you were mean to me. You're the reason I was insecure. You threw rocks at me. You threw an egg at me. I barely remember, right? I'm like, well,
funny.
I'm like, you're not ugly now. Can I buy you a drink? You know, like,
and the rest was history.
Yeah. And the rest was history.
Wow.
But the reason I bring that up is as I got married to my dream girl, we now had everything. And she kind of bought into the money side of stuff. Now that she's older, she'll admit. Mm-hmm. But I was happy where I was at. She wanted me to build this huge home. And I did. And where the awakening came to me, the first one, when I was building the home, my dad, there's three things that happened. So my dad sends me for my birthday.
Have you been in contact with your dad?
On and off. Like I wasn't very close to my dad,
right?
Because he was an overseller, back-end seller, manipulator, liar, and cheater. And I hated him for it. He had forgot my birthday and told me when I was 10 that he didn't forget my birthday. He didn't believe in birthdays. And at that moment, I'm like, my dad's everything my mom said he is. Mm. And at that time, he's my hero. He completely blew it. Mm. But he married a girl closer to my age than his. And he wasn't ever there for me. He actually told me to drop out of law school when things got tough, like kind of shit on me. So I was just, but as I got older and felt more secure, I wanted to be close to him.
Right.
So I was talking to him.
Yeah.
But it was hard to get close to him.
Right.
And at 30, though, my dad sent me a birthday present. Now, I was just starting to make the plans for the new house. I was just married, just had my first daughter, and I have three girls and one boy now, but my first daughter, and I literally was riding high, more money than I ever dreamed of. And my dad sends this huge box, and it's a sport coat. Mm-hmm. Sport coat, put it on, it fits perfectly. I started to cry. My wife's like, why are you crying? I said, my dad actually called someone to get my size. Like, this is custom made. This is, I mean, I don't have, you know, the off the shelf body. So I was like, oh my gosh, you know, this is amazing. And I'm crying. And then I open it up to see, you know, if it's custom made, happy birthday, Saks Fifth Avenue, Brooks Brother. I don't know. I look in, he tore all the pockets out. So it had no pockets. So I started to cry again. And I'm like, I can't believe he's doing this to me. So I call him immediately. I'm like, Dad, I got that birthday present. What the F? He's like, what do you mean? I said, you tore all the pockets out. I can't wear this jacket. He goes, it's not for wearing. It's like, well, what is it for? He goes, it's to remind you that you're just like me. I'm worried about you. Hanging in your closet. I go, I'm just like you. What an asshole. He goes, No, you're just like me. I don't want you to be the richest man in the cemetery. You got to stop living for money. You have so much. You can't take anything with you when you're gone. I want you to look at that jacket, remind you that you're just like me, and I'm not going to live my life because I can't take anything with you. You're so money-driven. I'm so worried about you. I was so pissed, right? Ego-driven at the time.
Absolutely.
I'm like, he doesn't get it. My wife tells me at the time, by the way, and my mom, who doesn't really like my dad, that I don't get it. Right at that time now, they're telling me, you don't get it. And I was like, I don't get it. I'm building this huge home in Rancho City. I got a Ferrari, a Porsche, a boat, a motorhome. I can do whatever I want, and I don't get it. You're a second grade teacher. You've never worked. I'm the one paying for everything. This is the way my mind worked. Now I keep going. I build the house. I'm lying in bed. In one key moment right there, I look up in the ceiling the day we moved in. And I remember telling myself, oh, shit. I never had felt so empty in my life. It was like the pinnacle that had nothing left to buy. Like I owned everything that I dreamed of, from cars to, you know, Ferrari, you know, not to Ferrari, but part, like stupid stuff. I was doing everything and literally so empty. And then I went on a terrible solution to that. Buy more things, buy different things, surround myself with the wrong friends. Now, at this time, I'm pivoting to be CEO of Lee Steinberg Sports Entertainment, most noble sports agency. I'd been kicked out of Samsung because the company got too successful, and I was really a sales guy, not a CEO.
Right.
Right. We became second largest manufacturer of phones. Samsung became really big.
So where at this point, where was most of your money accrued? In what space?
Yeah. So first of all, since I've been in technology for so long, right, I had great sense of Qualcomm, AMCC, all the San Diego chip companies, Sun Microsystems, and I kept buying real estate because my dad was in real estate and my grandpa was in real estate. So I bought real estate in 93 starting and I invested in some really good investments. In fact, part of my problem was everything I touched was turning into gold. It wasn't just the money.
It's a champagne problem, Dave.
Yeah.
That's a good problem to have.
Except for when
everything I touch just fucking kills you.
It killed it. Well, I started believing my own bullshit, right? That I was Midas. So I didn't have to ask anyone for help. In fact, if anyone gave me advice, and some people warned me, I just poo-pooed it, man. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? I'm Dave Meltzer.
Yeah, I can do it.
Like,
yeah.
I'm lost, so lost.
Yeah.
And, you know, so then I get with Lee, and Lee's an alcoholic. I'm surrounding myself with parties all the time.
Now, isn't Lee, is that Jerry Maguire? Was that?
Yeah, they based the movie Jerry
based
Maguire.
Based Jerry Maguire.
Cameron Crowe followed him around. You know, he's in the movie. Troy Aikman's in the movie. Lee, you know, is the king of agentry, but he has his own personal issues.
Why was he so great at being an agent, in your opinion?
Because he's probably the most intellectually smart lawyer that I've ever met. Best negotiator. He understands so much about the law, the collective bargaining agreement, salary cap. He invented so many different things back then when there was more creativity in being an agent.
Yeah.
And then built a reputation by, you know, literally representing the best of the best, from Troy Aikman to Steve Young to Warren Moon to Bruce Smith to Thurman Thomas. He had eight, this will never be done again, but he had eight first picks in a row. Right. So imagine, and he knew how to, PR himself and how to, like, you know, he'd go and imagine you're the top recruit in baseball too, right? Jeff Morad, you're the top recruit for baseball.
Yeah.
And he's bringing in Sabathia Ramirez into your living room to talk to your parents, not to you, while you're like this and just saying, hey, Lee Steinberg is taking care of me like nobody else. You see this $100 million contract? He's the smart, like, who are you going to sign with? People used to get mad that Lee wouldn't recruit them. You know, he was incredible. Wow. And then Lennox Lewis, Evander Holyfield, the boxing side of things. He was incredible.
Wow.
Olympic teams that he represented and marketed. Wow. Really great. But anyway, I was surrounding myself like Lee.
He had his personal struggles with alcohol.
Yeah, alcohol and some other stuff too. But I understand why. Like, we had access to everything, and I literally lost my mind. You know, and I remember my...
We teetered the line over here at the
ranch. Yeah. Not that I've corrected this. Not that, anyway, my best friend, the guy who asked my wife to go steady,
right,
he stopped hanging out with me. And I was bummed because I wanted to share this killer job with my best friend. So I take him out golfing And I'm like, hey, dude, how come you don't hang out with me anymore? I got, you know, this party to go to. We can go to the Grammy Awards. We can go to this. You know, I want to hang out. And I think I was kind of reaching out because I needed some stability instead of the idiots that I was hanging out with. Mm-hmm. And he literally shook my world because he's like, dude, I don't like who you hang out with. I'm like, well, I hang out with this celebrity and this. What do you mean? These guys are amazing. He goes, I don't like who you're hanging out with and what you guys are doing. I'm like, oh, well, you know, I'm not doing what they're doing. Mm. He goes, Dave, you can lie to me, but don't lie to yourself. And I left that golf match literally crying because it, like, you know, like, as you're saying now, you know when someone, and it hurts so bad because it's so true. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like when I was 15 and somebody teased me about my big nose. Mm-hmm. I went home crying because I got a big nose.
Yeah.
Right? You know, if they said I wasn't, you know, I was stupid, that wouldn't bother me at 15. Because I'm like, dude, I'll take you on any day intellectually.
Right.
But big nose, that hurt.
Yeah, right.
I hear you. Small penis killed me. You know? Well, that's how I broke. Well, that's how I broke my nose. Honestly, I walked into the wall with an erection. Now my wife's really gonna kill me.
You
wanted the other side of Dave Meltzer.
That's what
stud.
I want, man.
They don't call Mike Stud for nothing.
That's what we want.
All right, good. Anyway, so he tells me this.
Legend.
No more than 2 weeks later, I'm partying with Little John at the Grammy Awards. I lied to my wife. Literally one of those two outfit deals. I leave in a corporate suit saying I got a business meeting, and I got the Grammy Award outfit in the car.
Hey, honey, just getting into bed.
Exactly.
See you tomorrow.
And she knew I was lying. Mm-hmm. And I came home high, drunk, 5:30 in the morning. Mm-hmm. And I remember my friend who dropped me off, he's like, you want to spend the night at my house? And I was like, no.
He knew where you were walking into.
He knew. Because she was yelling at me on the cell phone. I turned her off about 3 a.m.
Right.
And but I came home, and she was waiting there. First time in her life, in our marriage, that she expressed how unhappy she was. I mean, she'd been pissed at me before.
Right.
We've gotten in fights.
Right.
But I'm talking crying, disappointing, truthful, I'm not happy, I'm leaving. You better take stock in who you are and what you want to become because I'm leaving. Now, I got really pissed, right? I was not an empathetic husband. I was not a good husband. And I got pissed at her and went to blame, shame, and justification. Like, who do you think you are? I got a nanny over there. I got cars here. I got
this.
Exactly. Who do you think you are? Mm-hmm. I woke up in the morning even worse in the ego, literally worse. I sat there.
I'm the same fucking way. I used to be the same way.
Yeah, I was super pissed. And I was literally thinking, what divorce lawyer should I call? And I'm going to take everything she has. Right? I'm a lawyer. This is where my ego was. And then, I'm going to try to say this without crying. Mm-hmm. Then I looked over in my closet. Mm-hmm. And there was that goddamn jacket.
Yeah. Didn't want to be fucking alone, man.
And I was just like my dad, man. I looked at that jacket and I'm like, oh my God. Mm-hmm. I'm a liar, a cheater, a manipulator, overseller, back-end seller. I'm a shitty husband, right? I am a shitty husband, and I wouldn't admit that I was probably not the best dad either because I put so much focus on my kids, but I will admit, and I don't know if I was a good dad or not because I was drunk and high and going out so much. In my mind, I was a good dad, but now that I'm getting even older, my kids are getting older, I probably wasn't the best dad.
Right.
I am now, and I'm a great husband now, but I'll tell you, man, I started outlining values, and that's where
that conversation was the huge shift.
Well, because I literally have married, like I know, like that was my soulmate,
right?
And I still do. Like I'm one of the few people I am way more happily married at 52, more attracted to my wife at 52 than before. And you know, is she a perfect woman? Not even freaking close. Is she perfect for me?
It don't exist.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
She's perfect for me, dude. She is, even my relatives will tell you like, oh shit, these two people belong together. Everyone wants us to have a reality show because she's even more crazy than me, but I'm just afraid they'll take my kids.
She's kind of a hard ass. She'll tell you.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And she's absolutely one of the funniest people without trying to be
that
you'll ever meet. Like
I got to meet
her.
You
know, my posse back here is probably shaking their head going, oh, we freaking love Julie.
Yeah.
I mean, she's outrageously awesome and beautiful inside and out.
You're glowing over there. You're beaming over there.
Yeah,
talking about
so it. Because I saved that, and it took me, you know, 2 years, you know, learning to meditate, like it's starting to attract. I watched the movie The Secret, which I'm now in Beyond the Secret. I started studying Think and Grow Rich Again, like all these different things. and that led to me writing books and speaking and manifesting and changing. Here's the coolest thing about my entire life, in my opinion, is I'm one of the few people that bottomed out 2 years before I lost everything. Like, most people could tell you that story. You know, I lost everything. I was homeless. You know, I saw God or whatever their freaking stories are, right. And I appreciate them.
Right.
But the coolest thing about my story is I bottomed out when I had millions and millions of dollars. I had a golf course, a ski mountain, 33 homes, cars out the yin yang. I could buy whatever I wanted, and I bottomed out because of love, like honesty and love. And then when I lose everything, I'm so prepared for it that it scared my wife. Like, I was so prepared because I had shifted the paradigm. Like, you're going through a transformational shift right
now. Absolutely,
yeah. Right? I went through mine 2 years into this thing. So by the time I'd already shifted my mindset to like, dude, I made $1 million 9 months out of law school. I was $100,000 in debt from law school. I didn't know anything, never had a real job. I didn't have any rich friends. To, hey, I just lost over $100 million, but I have learned a ton. Right, I've literally have no debt, you know. I may not own anything,
right. But
I've always treated people nicely. I have huge friends. Mm-hmm. Like, how am I going to take me? It took me 2 weeks to make my first $1 million. 2 weeks, and my wife before.
I mean, you're a rock star in space, obviously.
I have a quantum memory to make money. Like, it's inherent, just like some people do things. Right. Like a 5-year-old can play the piano. Innately, yeah. I was at five. I was like Gary Vaynerchuk.
Yeah.
Like, I tell him what we have and why we love each other so much is very few people are born with a quantum money making machine. Mm-hmm. Like, just selling baseball cards or bottle caps or whatever it is.
It's got it in you.
It's a hustling. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that not only do I have that in me, but I know it, and now I use it like Superman for good.
Right. I know, it's really what you're doing, though.
It is. It's my mission.
I see what you're doing, and I love it. That's why I'm so attracted to it.
And the money keeps on coming more and more, and it's like...
Even more so.
And I drive a Chevy Volt. I was over at that other party from the social media, and it's one of those Hollywood houses, probably $30 million.
Extremely tacky.
Two Rolls Royce, all this stuff. I did my favorite TikTok video. I just started doing them. I literally held up my phone, and I'm like... Hey, this is Dave Meltzer. I'm just here from the ICMX Awards. I said, check out this Lamborghini behind me. I don't own it. Check out this $30 million house. I don't own it. So if people are standing in front of these houses and these cars, don't believe them.
Right.
I drive a Chevy Volt, but I'm happy.
Right.
Learn how to be happy. All this shit can be yours too if you want. Like, that's the way I feel now. Mm-hmm. Like, I like knowing the power I can get one.
Absolutely.
But I'd rather buy a community center than a Ferrari.
Yeah, absolutely. And I see it's when the proof is in the pudding. When I said, meaning as soon as I started caring, being less attached about the outcome of the success and the money, and the intentions going into things coming from a more pure place, the opportunities doubled. All the things I wanted to happen without even trying. I just got a tattoo right here. Don't try. And Charles Bukowski wrote that on his tombstone.
Yeah.
And just the idea, even sitting here with you, if I was the old me would try to take the wheel and steer my music career the way I needed to be, like, I wouldn't be sitting here doing a podcast. You know what I mean? Like, but it's been so special because I just went with the flow of like where life, the pivots that life have given me, realizing that in hindsight, I look back and I realize that's why I've been rewarded, because I always jumped. I didn't get in my own way too much.
Right.
You know what I mean? But
see, I think you put like, if I was my tombstone, I put don't try, .. allow.
Exactly. Yeah.
And allowance is an activity. It takes a lot of free will.
Absolutely.
To allow things. Like, the biggest misnomer are these, you know, counterintuitive thoughts. Like, allowance is a counterintuitive thought. Mm. People don't know how much free will, activity, action, and hard work needs to be put into allowing things.
Absolutely.
It's crazy.
Absolutely.
The analogy that I came up with most recently, which may even help you in your transformation, is that as you try, so if we're running a race against each other, let's say we're going to run a marathon, you and I,
right. You're
faster, stronger, et cetera. Well, and you're trying and I'm allowing. Mm-hmm. What allowing means to me is that I'm focusing the same amount of energy that you are to go faster, stronger, and longer. Mm-hmm. And I'm taking the same amount of energy to clear the interference to the power that I'm already connected to, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we may both start a race with 100 pounds on our backs. Mm-hmm. Well, by you trying and creating resistance, like you even showed it physically, you're adding weights. While when I'm allowing, I'm using my energy to take off the weights.
Absolutely.
So in the end, I kick your ass.
Absolutely.
Because you end up with, you know, how strong and fast you are. If you have 200 pounds and I have 10, I'm going to kill you.
Exactly.
And that's truly the analogy I use for life. I'm literally constantly going, okay, here's my highest frequency. Ooh, I'm creating resistance, right? I'm creating an interference. The need to be right, offended, separate, mm-hmm. inferior, superior, angry, frustrated, anxious, resentful. All of these things are just adding weights to my back, and they used to, and they probably still do sometimes. Yeah. But even worse than adding weights is they also set me in the wrong trajectory and accelerate me into the wrong trajectory.
Absolutely.
Whereas allowance keeps me at peace, moving steadily, which when I say steadily, I mean enjoying the consistent, everyday, persistent, without quit pursuit of that potential, that true trajectory, not an offset trajectory based off of ego-based emotions,
absolutely.
Insecurities, and illusions that we create. People create their own illusions.
Absolutely.
You give me any situation, I'll find the light, the love, and the lessons in it. Why? Because I practice it. I come up, you know how people frame things sometimes going, well, this isn't as bad as losing my leg. Mm-hmm. You know, like the guy that lost like two fingers, like, at least I didn't lose all five, right? So Steve's the killer, man. That's awesome. It's the rest of my entourage.
Steve, keep it down.
It's the rest of my entourage. Don't laugh. Yeah. My nephew.
You're coming deep.
You're too famous.
I love it. I love it.
Must be halfway through. But, you know, to find and make a practice, like take a framework of shitty situations and be like, how can I find light in that?
Absolutely.
Like Viktor Frankl, right? Mm-hmm. In the Holocaust, eating fish head soup with water and finding the light in it so he can get to the next day, mm-hmm. so he can tell the story to everybody what happened.
Are you a Wayne Dyer guy?
I hope. That's my man. I'm one of the few people that work out to Wayne Dyer. He's on my shuffle.
Me too.
I actually still use a shuffle, by the way, in case you don't know what that is. It's a little square with music on it.
Why do you choose that? Just because you don't want your phone around?
No. So I use the shuffle for two reasons. One, I have like this killer mix of music and Wayne Dyer. That just is perfect.
I knew you were a Wayne Dyer guy.
Heck yeah. Power of intention is the key.
So good.
And then two, I do like the fact that it's just so small in a clip, and I go at minimum 1 hour a day. I go at my workout, right? I'm not like one of these guys that just
like half-assing it on your phone.
Yeah, I'm not there to talk to you. In fact, it gets harder because, as you know, you're building your own personal brand.
Absolutely.
And I know it sounds silly, but I'm like a housewife when I go work out. People think they know you, right? That's the problem with the Instagram stuff, right?
Absolutely.
Like, it's one thing, like when you're Steve Young, mm-hmm. people don't bother you because they don't feel like they know you. They just admire you.
Yeah.
In fact, they're scared of you a lot of times.
Right.
You know, and only like the bold super fans will bother you.
Right.
But when you're a housewife or an Instagram, middle-aged Instagram freak, people just think like, how's Julie?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, I saw Miles in Turkey.
Yeah, you're so approachable as well. You know what I mean?
I'm trying to work out. So I have to
fuck off, man. I got some sets left.
Dude, I am, you know, when you're over 50.
This body didn't build itself.
Exactly. This body, if I worked out as hard as I do now, this body would be incredible.
How old are you now?
52.
Looking good, man.
But at 32, it would have been incredible working out as hard as I do.
Absolutely.
So some of the guys at the office work out at my gym, and I see them walk by there. Totally ripped, you know, not even sweating. And there I am, like the old, furry, fat Jewish guy sweating all over. Like, people don't even like to work out in the same gym as me anymore because I have to bring like a beach towel just to clean off the equipment.
Are you a big cardio guy?
Yeah. 30 minutes minimum a day, stretching, balance, and weights. But 7 days a week. Seven days a week. Minimum 1 hour a day for my health. So it doesn't mean cardio every day, but not weights every day, but balance and stretching.
Stretching is one category I need to revisit.
Oh, to do it. I didn't do it till older, and I wish I did.
I need to. I know I do.
I tore Achilles at 40 because I'd never stretched. Mm. You know, I felt fine until that sucker popped.
Yeah, I've had some back issues. I went and got it checked because I was like, my body feels great otherwise. But I'd had this, like, couldn't really tell. Didn't have any impact injuries from baseball or anything, but supposedly from the pitching motion. And I was a very strong squatter. So as pitchers, if you're a big guy, whatever, right? But most pitchers, like on training regiments, they don't want you adding weight. They don't want you getting any, you know, because you get stiff, you add muscle, the elasticity of your arm goes down, and the whole flow of your arm has changed. That being said, I was working my fucking ass off in my lower half. I was squatting super heavy. My dad's a physical trainer, been his whole life, and I remember him vividly saying, your back's gonna hurt when you're older. Like I was doing four plates of squats on each side and I was injured. So like the only way I had, that was my only channel of competition. Like I could be the best squatter right now because I can't pitch, you know what I mean? And it just fucking turns out I got a few cracked vertebrae, but not bad enough to where I need surgery or anything. But I,
for now,
I bring that up only because I can't like, it's a, I'm doing this treatment, but it's they're already showing like reverse. It's getting smaller. So they said it takes like 4 to 6 months, which is kind of a long time. But it's been going and getting treatment. But yeah, just from like they said they get like the motion, the you know extension of being a pitcher.
Yeah,
they get a lot of pitchers, I guess, with this injury that like pulls on some of the vertebrae or whatever. But yeah, that's the only thing. Like
you'll
I need to be a flex. What'd you say?
You'll love getting old.
Yeah. I don't.
So getting old is one of those things like having kids or getting married. Nobody can explain to you. They can tell you all they want.
Right.
You'll never believe them. They never can explain to you. But the one that's remarkable about getting old to me is like I sit there and think about what my dad told me, my grandpa told me. And I'm sitting there going, shit, I'm turning into them. Like it's incredible. But once again, I'm turned it into, I don't believe, I know this might sound insane. I believe that it's a mindset. Age about even aging like there's nothing there's nothing in the world that says that our bodies should not like get stronger. And even now that we have so much biochemistry and technology, you know, take like a lot of guys do testosterone and I've been doing research on it because mine have sunk a little bit,
right?
But and I say this because literally it's like if you're vitamin D deficient,
right,
you're gonna take vitamin D,
right?
Well, like right now they have limited knowledge, but like if you're tea deficient, you should take some tea. Right. Not like to the point you look like
my father does.
Canseco, like father the boy
does.
Up there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I will, like when my level gets lower, like right now I take estrogen blocker
right.
So I don't got moobs all the time. But technology's gonna change everything. I like laugh about the hair treatment stuff because I'm like, dude, when I'm 80, I'm just going to take the reggae pill, and I'm having dreadlocks.
The reggae?
I am, man.
I love that.
I always want dreadlocks. I'm taking the dreadlock pill,
yeah.
And I'm going to take the anti-back hair thing to get rid of that.
And then you're good.
Exactly.
And then you're
I'll
on
be
the beach.
Genetic, exactly. I'll be back like that freak on the isogenics thing. You know that guy that has like the 80-year-old face and
he's
the 30-year-old body?
Yeah.
That's like the premature humanoid type of technology we have now.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually we'll get it all down.
You're doubling down on that.
I'm living. Been a long time.
Hell yeah.
I'm gonna look better at 111 than I do now.
It's interesting.
Mark that. It's on camera. Yeah. You know how Gary Vee makes those like predictions that 13 years later he puts
camera.
It back?
Yeah.
Yeah. Check out this footage when I'm 111. I'm gonna be better looking than this. I know it's hard to believe.
Man, I was just gonna say, you're looking good though. It's one of those things where you know, I got it as I got into looking into the mind state and nourishing your mental, treating it. You know, I could relate so much to taking care of your body. And as an athlete, you have to nourish and you have to nourish your body because it is your engine for what you're doing your entire life, you know? And the fact that I never saw it, the mind as the same thing, like up until just recently where I was like, of course I should meditate every day and learn how to control my thoughts because my entire reality starts and ends in my mind, you know? And it's one of those things where I've tried to normalize what, you know, taking care of your mental and working on it. I feel like there's a stigma amongst young people, when I say young, just, you know, even under 40, where it's like, oh, you need self-help? Like why you need to read a book? Like there's like a little bit of
which is weird because we've never had more depression, anxiety,
right?
Than now, ever.
And our culture is currently just, I feel like it's creating more and more and more with how, where our culture is trending. The comparing
it's
constantly.
Man. It's that word will define all that's going on. We're separating ourselves.
Yeah.
And from the younger people who, you know, I did this research from Stanford with young kids, what they're looking for in a president if they were going to vote. Like, undeniably, unification was the number one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whatever party their parents were in, it didn't matter what they were hearing at home.
Right.
They all wanted to be one. They wanted to be, and as much as technology can connect us, it's separating us. Mm-hmm. And that's why I talk about two things that I think will make a difference. No matter what age you are, when people ask, this is a hyper-competitive world, as the world opens up, there's just more people competing for the best stuff worldwide. Absolutely. And we can do that because of the virtuality of what the competition looks like.
Right.
You want to separate yourself. You really want to win. Two things. One, toughness. Right? You're a college athlete. You know a different level of toughness to get to where you were. Toughness is not a quality that people like right now. Right. If somebody's tough on you, you're going to hurt their feelings.
Right.
Like there's all this like tiptoe on. And I think that's bullshit. Like I'm teaching my kids now, not to the point where like Joe DeSena, you know, from Spartan, where he drops his kids 4 miles from a house and you give a choice, like you walk home with weights or, you know, do a workout with me when you get home and do burpees for 6 hours or whatever he does.
Right.
But no, like real toughness.
Right.
Like, and then two, telephone. Like people, the telephone was invented to talk to each other. Not to text. Texting's fine.
Right.
If I want to inform, like you, Mike, hey, I'm 5 minutes away,
right,
perfect time to use text.
Right.
But if I want to communicate with you, if I want to move you with connotation, intonation, context, I'm going to use my voice. My voice carries a vibration.
Absolutely.
Right? I can move people with my voice. And that telephone, the voice capability of a telephone is underutilized today. It'll be maximized and underutilized literally in 10 years. And those who know... You know, I made this joke earlier today. Like, I give really good phone, man. That's what separates
me. We talked about this in your office.
I can kill people on cold calling and selling all by the telephone. And I'm just getting more and more of a literally advantage in the world because I'm like a little mule. I'm extremely tough, right? I'm not going to quit. You're not going to hurt my feelings. You're not going to define me. You just define yourself as someone trying to define me, which I take as a compliment.
Right.
That you give a shit enough to try to define me. Thank you.
Right.
It's so easy. These are little mindset tricks. And then two, you know, I literally can use a phone and that has made me more successful. But I think my kids 10, 20 years from now will set themselves apart with all the similarities in technology and things that will make us equal. And when everyone's separate, the toughness and telephone will bring them
interesting
to emotionally.
Yeah.
I think it's good advice.
Yeah, absolutely. You're filled with good advice, sir. So I don't want to rush past this. Losing, now you touched
on it. Rush past me losing everything?
You touched on it a bit. No, it's just such an, it really is an exceptional part of the story.
Yeah. No, it's in my life too.
To become, and you, the fact that you put the story on a pedestal and you perpetuate that to your audience. I love.
Yeah. Because, can I butt in? Because I rarely say this and I want to like reveal stuff here because I love you.
My God.
But like, here's the cool thing. If somebody would have told me, this is how much I was money defined, that if somebody would have told me that I even had to tell my mom that I went bankrupt, let alone I went bankrupt and lost her house because I forgot to put out her name, let alone get on a stage, just one stage. Like that would have been like punishment, like going to jail that I almost would have think of that I don't want to live anymore, let alone every day kind of bragging about it. So people feel more comfortable that, hey, even financially you can screw up really, really big, which I have done, but it's just a lesson to me. And it was an inspiration.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's important for everyone out there, man. If you can try and I don't even call them fail, but learn lessons, right? I always say, what did I do to attract this to myself? What am I supposed to learn from it? And be at peace with that.
It truly is the best. It really is. I look at my life and I talk about it on this podcast. I've had a very privileged life in a lot of ways, not facing extreme hardships, not being challenged, like these things that are out of your control. You get sick, your mom dies, these things that could just put you right off track. Didn't have it. I had this one, the Tommy John surgery. Even that, right away, music happened immediately.
Yeah.
Like, and I just went and did that. So it really didn't even settle in as a hardship. Then I just went through the first time, like being in love with somebody and then falling out of love and what a public, I dated Jose Canseco's daughter.
Yeah, yeah.
And
at least you got the jersey, bro.
Yeah. It's a win-win. Exactly. Got to meet Jose. We're fine. No, but it was a hard, you know, going through that. And then, you know, a lot of the things you've been talking about at a much lower level, waking up here in this house. I mean, I grew up very middle class, like blue collar, low, you know, house. My family grew up probably just this side of the house, the whole house, you know right. what I mean? And I'm living here with all my friends and doing this shit that I never thought I would ever have done, this life I'm living, and being and waking up down, sad for no, like, I'm a very happy person. I'd never had any bouts of sadness or anything, and it was like almost like I was ashamed to be able to, like, knowing where I came from and what I have now, and then knowing I'm not happy.
Yeah.
It was like you said when you were looking at the ceiling and just like, holy fuck, I got this, you know, I've bought everything, like, and I still feel empty. And, you know, again, it wasn't, I'm not saying I feel like I had everything, but it was a realization. Now looking back at that, that time is what put me down this path of finding out who I truly was, what I'm really trying to do with my time here, and perspective shift in my ego. I mean, I was making every decision with my ego, and I didn't even know what an ego was.
Right.
I thought this was me. My ego was me. And this is just how I am, man. That's why I win. You know, I'm a fucking...
You're wise beyond your years now.
But I can't say it enough that it's just been this last 24 months, and it all was birthed out of a hardship where I felt like shit. And I really, like, it was like a gut check period of time where I was just like, who are you? You know what I mean? Like, I kind of was just rocking and rolling, touring this city, that city.
Yeah.
Never took a break. Never really thought about life outside of the bubble we were living in. And, you know, kind of that, you know, now in hindsight, I look back, I'm like, thank God. My outlook towards hardships or bad days, moments, events have completely changed.
Yeah.
From that, my life has changed because I used to get very stressed out by the trivial things of daily operations. Yeah, you know?
You know what's interesting? One of the things I thought about when I went through my quantum shift was, and I'm like you, right? Super positive, but overreactive, ego-based,
yes.
Right? Even though I was happy, it's just a weird nuance that I tried to explain to people. But the one thing that I remember thinking about is, what if when things didn't happen the way that I wanted them to happen, that I could feel good about it? Like, the idea that when something what I perceived as negative, what if I truly believe with faith that was pushing me towards something better?
Absolutely.
Where most people, immediately when something happens that they don't plan on happening or something that they would perceive as negative, they believe it's pushing them towards something not good.
Right.
The
attachment.
Through faith, right? I have no emotional attachment to the outcome. It's simply, oh, you know, I just lost 200 grand in that deal. Oh, I wonder what's coming here now. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, and it's so much easier with more experience and more years behind you because you start seeing these patterns going, wait a second, I've been here before. This guy, he robbed me, cheated me, lied to me. I'm so glad that he's out of my life. This is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. Like, I literally will even, I'll even play with the universe. I have friends that are mooches and manipulators that you probably still have some that will come by because you're the only guy with any money that they know. And they're like, dude, I need $1,200 for some lie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, now I'm super proud of myself because I tell them, hey, look, you're not going to owe this to me. Right, I'm giving it to you under the guise that you're not going to need anymore. So just, I will give it to you. You don't owe it to me, but don't come and ask me, is this a fair agreement?
Right.
No matter what, I'm not available for you, but I'm going to give it to you. Or you can borrow it from me and borrow again.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't pay me back, then obviously you can't ask for again, right?
Right?
And it's been so wonderful because some guys just take the $1,200 and for $1,200, I never have them
They're
back again.
Fuck that guy.
Exactly.
Now, we don't have to get into the details of it exactly, but when you realized that you were fucking losing all that money.
Yeah.
Were you already in your phase of, you said you were kind of already prepared for it?
I was where you are right now, right? I'm going through this transformation.
Interesting.
Right? And my wife was with me, but got a little bit nervous because I wasn't getting nervous. And I really wasn't. I had a job. Working for Lee,
right?
Making good money, not money like 33 homes, a golf course, a ski mountain money.
Mm.
But I wasn't, it was almost, this is funny because I do try to explain this. It was almost cleansing. Like, I wanted a new start. Like, I felt as if that money was dirty money. Mm. Like, it wasn't me, that I wanted to find myself with this new, fresh idea of that I'm going to make room. In fact, you know, most people know this story, that when I got my first check after bankruptcy from Lee, I brought it home, told my wife, hey, I'm writing this check to Patrick Henry High School, my high school, where my wife went to high school, for a kid to get a scholarship to college. And because I could have never went to college, nor my siblings, without scholarships. And I asked my wife, now I'm living, if I can give that. Now, remember, I went from a huge home, never thinking I had to work again. Everything was a joke to me money-wise. Mm-hmm. To a rented house, rented furniture in the house, one car, three daughters under 10, and a pregnant wife. And I'm there with my first check going, hey, everything's gonna be awesome, but I'd like to give this money for a scholarship. And my wife literally started to cry and say, oh my gosh, you finally get it. I'm like, what? She goes, you finally trust the universe. Wow. I go, I do. I really trust the universe. I'm so ready for this. And I'm so glad that you're still here with me. And I just want to thank you. And I say, when I make it all back, whatever you want is yours. All you have to do is ask me. And she said, okay, then double that check. And I said, no, I don't trust the universe. I literally did. I'm like, you're freaking insane. Like,
yeah.
Let me baby step this thing.
Yeah.
So when I did make it back, right, and we moved into the nice gated community and nice cars and things for her. Not for me. I still have this Chevy, but I'm living a humble life. I need, right? Well, my favorite was I came to her and I said, hey, what do you want? You are the light of my life. I'm not sure that I would have even come close to staying.
It's like an infomercial for marriage.
Yeah.
There's still a chance for us.
There is. Well, you got to meet her, right? You got to meet her now. She's fucking awesome.
I got to meet
her. But I remember this is the best line ever because it makes me cry. I said, hey, what is it? You know, Gucci purse. Mm-hmm. You know, what do you want? And she literally changed my perspective of my priorities in my life because she said, I need you to take care of yourself. I was like, what? She goes, if you take care of yourself, I know you're going to take care of everyone else. I just know you. That's why I'm with you because I know who you really are. Mm-hmm. And I started to cry. And at that time, my family was first. I made a goal when I lost
right.
family first, then activity I get paid for, mm-hmm. right? And I had pretty disciplined philosophies on this, and then my health. What I started realizing was I was 47 pounds heavier, that if you put your health behind your family and behind the activity you get paid for, you'll never work out.
Everyone's getting hurt.
You'll never work out.
Yeah.
So I started, told her, okay, before I schedule anything, even with family, hour on my health a day. Like I was in India, as you know, for 73 hours.
Yeah.
Before they wanted me to speak, press conference, all this. I'm like, okay, I got my hour set. They want me to do it this time. I can't. That's my workout. And literally, that's my priority. Even my kids, if I can't do it, I'm telling them, sorry, Dad, can you do this early? And I'll be back from the gym at 5:30. You know? Yeah.
No, but if your health isn't first priority, think about who's hurt. If your health goes by the wayside, you're hurting everyone you care about because – you know what I mean? Yeah. That's
it's so.
When did that shift happen?
So truly, about 2.5 years ago. Wow. That's
recently.
Yeah. So, wow. Because I was so buried in doing things for my family, activity I got paid for, and it came, which is weird, about the same time I started building my brand, which is weird because some people thought.
When you said building your brand, you mean your online
digital? My online digital brand, right? Like my own, like I never really cared about my personal brand. I was either Lee Steinberg's guy or Warren Moon's partner.
It didn't matter.
That was my brand. Yeah. But like Dave Meltzer as a brand. Right. And it happened, you know, 3 Super Bowls ago, Gary told me that I could have quality content consistently posted. I could really do something important.
Gary's the one that sparked it?
Yeah, well, because I went to Gary to help him because he was starting a sports agency.
Yeah.
So his brother, AJ, was really in charge. I know, AJ. And I'm like, dude, AJ, I'll help you guys. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't really know who Gary V was. All my team behind me was like, dude, that's Gary's brother. Ask him if you can be Gary. I'm like, who's Gary?
Yeah.
So Gary, I gave him all this advice about being a sports agent. And he said, hey, can you work with us and help us? I was like, sure. And Gary being Gary is like, what can I do for you? Mm-hmm. And I said, I know this might sound weird, but my guys want me to learn how to do videos for Instagram. Mm-hmm. Do you think I can? And he got super excited and helped me.
Fuck yeah, man. Fuck yeah. You can do it. Yeah. Hell yeah.
Exactly. But, yeah, you know, and but I loved it too because he did ask me one question nobody asked. He said, why do you want to do it? Right?
He wanted to know
that's when I fell in love with the dude. It wasn't just like, yeah, you're helping me with the sports. He wanted to know why I wanted to create videos at 50 years old.
Yeah.
And when I told him, look, man, my mission in life is to empower others to be happy. I hadn't got to the formula for over a billion people, mm-hmm. which I have now 1,000 times 1,000.
I've heard you say it, but can you explain?
Yeah, so early in life, my goal was to make over $1 billion. Mm-hmm. And I never could figure it out. In fact, as Bezos started making more and more money, it drove me crazy. I'm like, how does that guy wake up in the morning and figure out how to make $100 billion?
When is it enough, Jeff?
Yeah, exactly. But then he gives $10 billion for the environment. I was like, you're the man.
I know, I love that.
That's awesome. Yeah. It'll be the best thing and the most remembered thing the guy does.
Honestly,
unless he
will.
Gives another $10 billion.
Honestly, will be, though.
This would be cool. Yeah. But moreover, like, I sat there going, God, I can't figure this out. I can make $100 million. I could literally, another micro course, it would be longer, but I could give a course on how to make $100 million. I literally can. I know exactly how to
connect. That's an amazing skill set.
But I do. I know how to connect the dots backwards, yeah. But I could not do it for $1 billion, and still can't.
Yeah.
But it was cool because the minute I made this my mission, I started working, okay, how am I going to do that? Like, when you're a kid and you say, I'm going to change the world.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's a good saying.
Right.
But do you really know how to change? Well, I literally, and you'll get this through like Wayne Dyer and stuff, right. I believe that I could create a collective consciousness with 1/8 of the people on earth being happy. Right. If I can create over 1 billion people being happy. So I started doing the math and I said, what power do I have? I have the power to impact people, but not only impact people. It's like these micro courses. I believe like you're one of my 1,000s, yeah. That you're one of these people that I know if I teach you and you keep watching the videos and you keep hanging out, mm-hmm. That you're going to be able to teach him to teach him. Mm-hmm. So what happens if I can find in the next 60 years, when I look really good at 111, if I can teach you 1,000 mics to teach 1,000 of this guy to teach 1,000 of that guy, 1,000 times 1,000 is a million times 1,000 is a billion.
Crazy.
I just figured out a way to math. And here's my favorite reinforcement of my belief is I'll talk about this on stages.
Yeah.
Corporate stages too, not just like my woo-woo stages I get to talk to you for inspiration, but I'm talking about people paying me to
right.
motivate their companies or mm-hmm. sales trainings. And I always end with my mission. But here's the coolest thing. I ask on stage, just to see the believability, I said, who here, after listening to me speak or following me, truly believes? I just want to know if I'm high. Like, do you truly believe that I can impact 1,000, impact 1,000, impact 1,000? Mm-hmm. And everyone raises their hand, which, like, sets me off into a euphoria mm. of, like, holy shit. Like, I'm onto something
yeah.
that I'm nobody, but someday at 111, they may say, this nobody, Warren Moon's business partner, Lee Steinberg's guy, created a collective consciousness of happiness that created abundance, a more than enough attitude. It healed so many things on earth that suicide and depression and anxiety were the greatest things when he was 52. They're almost non-existent now that he's 111. That's a reality to me.
Yeah.
It's not, and I'm not emotionally attached to it,
right.
But it's a true mathematical yeah. reality that it's like telling you, hey, you're a good enough pitcher to pitch, you know, an ERA of 1.62.
Right.
Right? That's not reality for me.
1.61.
Oh, sorry. So two's easy. You see man. What I'm saying? Like, yeah. It's such a cool power to
yeah,
think, wow.
I love it, man. I fucking love it. I think I talk a lot about on our podcast. And I'm pretty open. I'm very open about just the transformative place I'm in, where I'm just kind of learning. I don't know exactly how I feel about every which way and how I want to see everything. I'm getting a lot of clarity though, and I try to articulate it in a way, and realizing like that the number one thing for me is, what's the best way of putting this? Like, as far as how I'm viewing my productivity, right? And I talked to you out there. I was like, you fill your day to the brim with shit. I see you rock. I talked to Jake. You know, you're rock and roll. You hear. And everyone who's successful, more or less, calls for you being busy. You're busy. It's what goes with the territory, right? And
active, though. Not busy.
Right. Active.
Busy's unavailable.
Right. And this is what I'm getting at. That's why I'm using the term busy. I'm looking at how I view my productivity is in a very transformative place, and the accolades and all the things that used to drive all of my decisions. I started it really came with changing my input. I started learning about the Tao Te Ching, and I read it a bunch. And
you and I read the same shit.
I know. That's why it's the connection. I went to your content. It's just like, I just can understand it because I see it a lot the same way.
Right.
But not letting these accolades be my identity here has been such a new thing that I'm trying to kind of just embody. And it's comes with, I think it comes from the athlete background, like, and a lot of athletes struggle with their whole identity is what they do on the field or, you know, what they've accomplished. And I wanted you to just highlight, because I think you do such an amazing job at it. Is just finding, and the word balance, I know, is a bit taboo in this sense, but the balance of, like, look, being here in the present moment and being the best version of myself, enjoying going outside, looking at the trees, and just enjoying being grateful, looking, finding the light and everything, where, you know, I was never doing that. Ever. I was never just, if I didn't have something going on, I'd be like, I'd have some kind of little anxiety about not having something going on. Instead of just existing, they refer to it the way of just like being in a flow state and allowing things to happen. There's a time for being down, and when I say down, just relaxed and with your friends and enjoying the present moment. And there's a time for, you know, but you do such a great job, you know, and the book, one of your books, The Compassionate Capitalism, like, just relates to that, just that title in itself. But the balance of, like, look, you can have both. You can have your day filled with things that you're going to go do. Instead of looking at it, things you have to do, it's things you get to do.
Yeah.
You know, and looking at it in these, it's really, you know, a lot of it's based off your mindset going into it. You know that you're going to be of service, and you know how it's going to come back to you full circle. But just touching on that a little bit, how you're able to, I mean, through all of your experiences, it's been crafted. Obviously, you've been explaining that a bunch. But just establishing that balance and maintaining it, I think you do such a good, from the looks of what your content, I feel like you do it the best.
And for me, I created a pragmatic system to define this for people, because some of the woo-woo terms that you can't even describe to me, like the way, the flow, being present, all these things, because I come from such a structured background and then went into this woo-woo phase of reading unbelievable. I sit on the Transformational Leadership Council with Canfield, Proctor, like, you know, Schechter, unbelievable, Lisa Nichols, and, you know, all the people from The Secret are my friends. And I'm, but let me explain real quickly. First, balance. Balance is based off of four things: personal values, experiential values, giving values, and receiving values. Mm-hmm. The balance is not 25, 25, 25, 25. The balance in life occurs with the continuum of a man-made construct called time. So as we evolve through time, we want to change our values. So I change my values and allow them to evolve every day. But I know my values every day. I take inventory in my personal experiential giving and receiving. So today, there may be a farther, a greater stress on the experiential. Tomorrow, it may be giving, and other days, 90% receiving. When I'm 111, it looks super good with my dreadlocks. Hopefully, it'll come out 25, 25, 25.
Right.
So that's the first thing in balance. Balance is only knowing your values, not a certain weight of each value. Okay. Yeah. So if you know your values, you can make decisions faster. You hang out with the right people. Right. You make the right decisions. You attract the right things. Two, the flow. The flow is broken down with two pragmatic series of questions. The first series of questions in order to get into the flow is how you can be a series of questions, not one question. If you can ask a series of questions, open-ended and closed-ended questions of how you can be of service or provide value to others, but also ask a series of questions of how or if they know anyone that can be of service or value to you. That's the flow.
Right.
Literally, that's the pragmatic definition of flow. Then understanding the time is student of your calendar. Attention plus intention equals the coincidences that you want. It's a mathematical occurrence. When two angles coincide into a perfect angle, it's a coinciding, a coincidence. Attention is what we're focused in on. Intention is the aggregate of what we think, say, do, and believe, and even the unconscious competencies of our personality traits, characteristics, perceptions. If we study our time, what we're doing during the day, what we're not doing, the white space of our calendar, and our sleep, we can encompass bending time. This it's really a lens of productivity, how much value we're going to provide, accessibility, how accessible are we to others, accessibility meaning how are we accessing what we want, and then a lens of gratitude. I get to do this. Finding the light, love, and lessons in it. Four, one of the biggest things and easiest pragmatic ways is being present. Never freaking knew what that meant. Being present means doing it now.
Yeah.
So you have a simple choice. When things come up in your life, you simply say, can I do it now? If I can't, put it into a repository, a list, a folder, an email, a text to yourself, and then prioritize it by what's important first and plan for it as a student in your calendar each day. You know how many guys like Andy Frisella make $1 billion just telling people, get five things done? You know, in golf, 100% of all short putts never go in. Mm-hmm. In present, 100% of the things that you do now get done. Mm-hmm. You get one thing done, you're already ahead of almost everybody on earth. You get five things done in a day, you're Andy Frisella, right? You get 10, you're Dave Meltzer, right? Like literally, because I do shit now. Yeah. The last one is the last piece that you're talking about. If you're going to have a practice from all these things that we read, you know, the greats out there, the Tao, Wayne Dyer, Think and Grow Rich, you just named a few of my favorites. Mm-hmm. It's very simple. Make it a practice to end fear. You're not going to get there, but make it a practice to understand ego, ego-based consciousness. Mm-hmm. Find your highest frequency at the beginning of the day. Use that as a baseline to practice ending fear, to go up to that baseline, not accelerate to a lower vibration or a lower awareness. Mm-hmm. If you continually do that, remember, this universe is an expanding universe. 99, still, the universe at 99% is black matter, empty space. Your human body is over 99% air. That means it has room to expand. Mm-hmm. In order to expand, all we need to do is practice one thing, ending fear. The other four are very pragmatic. The last one is the most difficult. And I know that because one of the key practices of ending fear is just simply to say thank you before you go to bed and when you wake up. Easiest way to change your life. I've inventoried the greatest thought leaders of all time. I've studied physics, metaphysics, quantum physics. I guarantee you it'll change your life if you can say thank you every day.
Sound familiar, guys?
Took me 9 months for me to... This is how hard it is to practice ending fear. It took me 9 months, and I believe this with the soul. Like, it's not even like anything. I believe this with my soul, that gratitude is everything. Mm-hmm. It took me 9 months to say every single day, thank you in the morning and thank you at night, until I could do it myself.
It's got this tattoo. Say thanks right there. I'm gonna make that like a brand.
It is.
We are like a little
Mine Ferocious Buddha.
Ferocious Buddha? Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
I'm the Ferocious Buddha.
You gotta send me some of that.
I'm the Ferocious Buddha. But when we get a really killer icon, you have to do a tattoo of the Ferocious Buddha.
You got any tats?
No. Huh? It's a Jewish, what's it called? Taboo for Jews. You can't be buried in. Certain things, and I'm not a religious person, just so my family is rarely religious, but there's certain religious things that I do out of respect for my mom.
Right.
Right? Like, I'll go to high holiday services because it's important to my mom.
Right.
I don't get any tattoos. One, you couldn't see it through the fur, but two, it would upset my mom.
Yeah.
And I hope my kids are watching. Don't do shit to upset me either.
It's a good framework, though. Be a good, that. I hope you put some time in your schedule today. You studied your schedule for losing to me in beer pong because you're getting ready to do
Jaeger
that.
Pong, you mean.
Jaeger pong?
Yeah. Beer pong's for sissies.
He's aggressive, man. Jaeger pong, we might never get. We're going to go to the Saddle Ranch after this ranch if we have some Jaeger. Man.
You'll be rapping.
What's our time right now?
Day, night.
Hour 20? I know how busy you are, and active. Sorry.
There's activity you get paid for, activity you don't get paid for. We're just active.
Yeah, we're active, baby.
That's right.
I really do. I said this to Larry last night, and I said it to you. It's at someone at your stature and how busy you are and the things for you to make time and come over here. It just shows me that, one, obviously you're practicing what you preach, but two, it's framework for how I want to grow and be as I get older. You know, just going to a kid's house and some rapper's house and going chopping it up in the studio.
Dude, I can't wait.
It's really it's an honor to sit with you again, and I think this is the beginning of a fruitful relationship.
Yeah, as long as I get another invite, dude.
Absolutely, man.
I'm coming back.
I wish we had you here like.
I'll sleep on a couch. I
12
don't care.
If we had you here 12 hours earlier, it'd be a whole different scene in here. We transformed this place. The place was a mess.
I can still smell a little bit of it.
this area up here.
Where's Steve? He's living proof of what it's like to live here. Live here long enough, you start looking like Steve. You got a cone on your thing. Yeah. You barely walk.
Everyone's injured.
Exactly.
Yeah. It smells like a house of blues up here, like a concert venue. Beers everywhere. It's really been a pleasure to sit with you again. Thank you so much. Everyone listening, a lot of them, I still get DMs. Hey, man, anyone to recommend or book to read? One, you have a bunch of books. You want to plug those here really quick?
Sure. Connected to Goodness, Compassionate Capitalism, Creating the Life You Love, and Game Time Decision Making, which is the newest one.
That's one.
I'm going to be coming out with Don't Do Business with Dicks.
And I love that.
That's the Grandmaster Flash.
Hell yeah. Is that in progress now?
Yeah.
Awesome.
We're working on it. Awesome. So I've actually keep writing books. So
yeah,
every 6 months, one book.
Are you sitting down and writing those? Or are you?
I outline them, research them, and I teach them, transcribe them, go back and edit again.
The whole books is just in all your content. You're talking. You
got more content. But yeah, no, man. And look, anybody that needs me, you can text me. I got that killer Gary V text number. So 949-298-2905. At David Meltzer. David Meltzer is easiest way to find me. Website's D Meltzer. But most of all, I still do. I mean, I work really hard at this, but I answer everything. Like, I'm not afraid to give my email address out. I'm not afraid to give you my text number. And if I don't get back as quickly, just be patient and know that, hey, man, this guy's waking up at 4 a.m. He has certain hours of the day that he's trying to get back to everyone. And if you give me a long one, all I'm going to do is, you know, DM you, email me. Because I can read those emails a lot faster than I can a DM. But I pride myself, like, I do not discount, you know, planting seeds under trees I'll never see, or like the people that just come up to me, like even you. Like, I have no idea that you follow me that much.
Yeah.
And there's so many people, even in India, right? And there's guys that are like, hey, man, Gary V got me started. You get me there. And there's all types of people that you can change. And you're one of those guys, Mike. So if you need me to be here, or you need me to promote anything that you have, you're one of my 1,000.
Much love. Hell yeah. I appreciate
it. Let me go kick your ass in some Jaeger Pong.
Let's go play some Jaeger Pong.
All right.
We're out.
Out. Hey, podcast listeners. Thank you for listening, as always, to today's episode. I know you've been enjoying the Road to Revenue episodes. They are downloading at record paces, and I am so grateful for you joining me, not only on the podcast, but live every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific time, 2 p.m. Eastern. Make sure you email me at david@dmeltzer.com or text me at 949-298-2905. Thank you so much.